Douglas Campbell put aside his crown and kingly robes when he went to see Donald Corcoran, the only survivor of the Terror's arrival. He had a strong feeling that the official trappings of king and speaker wouldn't get him anywhere, with a man who everybody agreed was now as crazy as a bag of weasels. No one was quite sure exactly what was wrong with Donald Corcoran. Two doctors had actually threatened to fight a duel over their diagnoses, until Douglas had his men forcibly separate them. Corcoran exhibited definite symptoms of hysteria, delusion, depression, compulsive obsessive disorders, mania, and mood swings so rapid you could get serious whiplash just trying to follow them. His intellect was intact, but strangely warped, his thoughts often chasing abruptly off in directions that even the most experienced scientific observers had trouble following. His emotions were clearly out of control. He laughed and cried a lot, sometimes simultaneously, for no obvious reason, and his reactions to some people and conditions could be violently extreme, to himself as well as others. The doctors doped him with every medication under the sun, to no useful effect. He could be quiet and calm and lucid, and then the theories he expressed on the possible nature of the Terror gave even the most hardened analysts nightmares. Several doctors had had to retire from the case, three had retired to start their own religions, and one had had a mystical epiphany and a sex change. Everyone currently working with Donald Corcoran got hazard pay. Direct exposure to the man was strictly limited, and all admittance papers to the institution where he was being held were stamped, "Enter at your own risk." No one had expected Corcoran to survive his dreadful experiences unscathed, of course, but it was becoming more and more vital that the nature and extent of his change be understood before the Terror appeared again. Douglas in particular needed to know whether Corcoran's unique condition was the result of stress, strain, and shock, or whether Corcoran was the inevitable result of even long-range contact with the Terror. The populations of the attacked Rimworlds had been driven insane by the presence of the Terror's appalling heralds, but Corcoran had been right at the edge of the solar system, racing towards hyperspace and safety. He should have been out of range and safe, but he had looked back through his probes and seen the Gorgon. He had looked into the face of the Medusa. Could just that have been enough to make Corcoran into something other than human? Douglas needed to know. He had other worries, too. All across the Empire, worlds in the line of the Terror's projected approach path were spending every credit they had or could borrow on upgrading their planetary defense systems to the maximum limit. They were buying attack ships, weapons, and orbiting mines and force shields, and every defensive and offensive safeguard known to humanity. Some were even pinning their hopes on strange, unproven devices of alien origin. The Rimworld's defenses had been no use at all, but then they'd been far short of state-of-the-art. When the Recreated were freed from their awful state by the Blessed Owen, their humanity and their planets restored in a moment, they were, of course, hundreds of years behind everyone else. And even after 2 centuries of determined self-improvement and a hell of a lot of Imperial grant money, they still hadn't caught up entirely. So an awful lot of worlds were planning to protect themselves with cutting-edge weapons tech, and to hell with what it cost them. What did the future matter? If the Terror came and found them wanting, none of them would have a future. Douglas wasn't convinced any of this would help. Neither were most of these worlds' representatives in the House. But if it kept people busy and offered them a modicum of hope and security, better economic stupidity than mass panic. Douglas, however, remembered the most important lesson of Empire. First, know thine enemy. So he decided he needed to see Donald Corcoran for himself, hear what the man had to say firsthand. He didn't tell the House. They'd just throw a major hissy fit at the prospect of the king putting himself into possible danger and order him not to go. So he decided not to worry them and go anyway. He didn't even tell Anne. Armed guards, heavy-duty tangle fields and force shields, and even a few portable disruptor cannon guarded the asylum holding Donald Corcoran, as much to keep people out as keep him in. The media had been using every trick in the book to try and get to him, and there were any number of fanatical groups and individuals ready to use any method to force their way in. Some wanted to kill Corcoran, in case he was somehow infected by the Terror and had brought its evil back with him. Some claimed he was a Judas goat, leading the Terror to its prey. Some wanted to worship him for being touched by God. Some wanted to kidnap and interrogate him in the hope of learning useful information about the terror, which they could then sell to the threatened worlds. And a few wanted to marry him. People will do the craziest things, if they're scared enough. Douglas wasn't crazy enough to go in there alone. He'd felt the need for specialist help on this one. So he contacted the Oversoul, and they sent him a top-level telepath to assist and protect him. This turned out to be a tall, strapping brunette who dressed in sweeping black silks and sported jet-black lips and heavy eye makeup. She also wore a bandolier of silver throwing stars, carried a disruptor on her hip, and had steel-toe-capped boots. She was at least a head taller than Douglas and radiated so much sheer presence that when she walked into a room, it felt like everyone else had just left, running. Her name was Crow Jane, and her gaze was disturbingly direct. If nothing else, Douglas was pretty sure she'd get Corcoran's attention.
If you're going to talk to the survivor, you're going to need heavy-duty protection. We're not going to take any chances with this guy. I've been studying the reports. I don't think it's safe for normal minds to spend too much time in his company. Madness on this scale can be contagious, especially when it's something new.
Really? How interesting. I'll have to depend on you, then, to keep his thoughts out of my head. I need to get some answers out of him. What do you think our chances are?
We'll get answers. Whether they'll mean anything, though. Just because he believes what he's saying when he says it doesn't make it true. Or useful. The reports say he likes to talk. In fact, they often have trouble stopping him. The trick is to get him to respond to what you're saying. And I hate to disappoint you, but there's going to be distinct limits to what I can see of his thoughts. I doubt very much that he'll be able to keep me out, but what's in his head may make sense only to him, and I can't risk digging too deep or too long. Madness is dangerous, and sanity can be very seductive. It can suck you in. I could end up trapped inside his head, unable to get out. So if you ask me to do something, and I say no, don't push. And if I say we have to go, we go at speed. Is that clear?
I asked for a top-level telepath.
And that's what you got. Most Espers wouldn't go anywhere near Donald Corcoran, and quite rightly. They'd probably end up with their brains dribbling out their ears. I can protect you from him, and I should be able to peek past his defenses. Settle for that.
I need information from him, things only he knows.
Crow Jane shrugged.
He won't be able to knowingly lie to me, but I can't make him tell me what he doesn't know.
How about the things he may have chosen to forget because they're too painful or too frightening?
Depends on how deep he's buried them. Some traumas can be so painful, so terrible, that the victim would rather die than remember. I can push him in the right direction, but I'm an Esper, not a miracle worker, despite what some of the tabloid media shows would have you believe.
It's going to be a long, hard morning, isn't it?
Got that right.
Douglas's authority and charm got them through the various levels of security at the asylum fairly quickly, until he and Crow Jane ended up in the quietly comfortable office of Corcoran's current analyst, Dr. Oisin Benjamin. It was a bright and cheerful office, with sunshine streaming through the open window. It had the usual desk and couch and book-lined walls, and everything was plush and cozy and agreeable. In fact, the only uncomfortable thing in the office was Dr. Benjamin. His handshake was weak, his smile was unsteady, and he had a slight but definite twitch in one eye. Not uncommon signs in someone who'd been exposed to Donald Corcoran on a regular basis, the doctor responded a little to Douglas's practiced charm, but Crow Jane clearly upset him. Especially when she sat cross-legged in mid-air, rather than perch on the straight-backed visitor's chair. After that, the doctor did his best to ignore her and direct all his remarks to Douglas. They sat facing each other across Dr. Benjamin's desk, while the good doctor fiddled constantly with a lethal-looking letter opener.
Donald Corcoran, yes, a very unusual man, quite remarkable, and so far entirely unresponsive to every traditional form of treatment. He's not interested in therapy. Hell, after time with Donald, most of our therapists require therapy. Medication doesn't work. We've dosed him with every drug we've got, and a few we imported specially, on dosages that would mellow out a Grendel, and he just laughs at us. He has a very unsettling laugh. Like he knows things we don't, things no sane man would want to know. We've had him here for, what, 10 days now, and we're still no nearer understanding what's wrong with him. Whatever he saw or felt out there on the rim, Your Majesty, he can't or won't tell us, and we have no way of making him.
What about his dreams? Do they tell you anything?
He doesn't sleep. Ever. In fact, according to my predecessor's notes, Donald hasn't closed his eyes since we got him here. Normally, such a long period of sleep deprivation would be enough to drive a man seriously psychotic. But with Donald, he says he won't sleep, in case the terror creeps up on him. It's my belief he's holding sleep at bay through sheer willpower, which shouldn't be possible. But, well, Donald does a lot of things he shouldn't be able to. He can hear what people are saying about him, even when they whisper, even when they're in the next room. And sometimes he gives answers to questions we haven't even asked yet.
Crow Jane perked up at that.
Has he been tested for telepathy or other esper abilities?
Dr. Benjamin still wouldn't look at her, addressing his reply to Douglas.
We ran all the usual tests, of course. None of the results made a blind bit of sense.
Why didn't you contact the Oversoul? We would have sent you an expert.
Donald's condition is extreme enough already without exposing him to esper meddling.
Ah, well, as long as there's a scientific reason.
But you have no objection to my seeing him with my associate?
The doctor shrugged unhappily.
You must do as you think best, Your Majesty. At your own risk, of course. I'll call for someone to take you to Donald as soon as his current visitor has left.
Douglas looked at him sharply.
He already has a visitor? I was under the impression no one else had been cleared to see him.
Well, no. But this was Angelo Bellini. You know, the angel of Madraguda himself. Charming fellow. It came all the way here, in person, just to make sure that Donald's spiritual needs were being ministered to. He gave me to understand that he had official consent. Doesn't he?
No, he bloody doesn't.
Donald Corcoran was being kept in a maximum security psycho ward, though he probably didn't realize that. People tended to add the word probably to whatever they said about Corcoran, because no one could be sure what he was and wasn't aware of. It tended to vary, suddenly and without notice. Certainly his surroundings didn't look like any kind of hospital ward or cell, even though they were very definitely both. Corcoran was supposed to believe he was being looked after in a secure country manor house, with wide-ranging gardens for him to walk in. A lot of effort had gone into providing him with the illusion of freedom. In fact, most of it was comprised of hollows, backed up with concealed force screens in case he tried to wander off. The illusion was really very convincing, backed up with state-of-the-art sight and sound, right down to all the correct scents of a garden in full bloom. Birds seemed to sing, insects seemed to buzz, and refreshing breezes came and went on a regular basis. Certainly, the pleasant summer heat felt entirely convincing to Angelo Bellini as he strolled through the gardens with Donald Corcoran, talking quietly of this and that. The angel had come as a representative of the official church, ostensibly to offer Corcoran spiritual comfort in his time of trial, but actually to try and enlist him into the cause. If Corcoran could be persuaded to join and endorse the church militant, and thus pure humanity, the general public could then be persuaded to associate joining the new church with standing against the terror, which could in turn be parlayed into increased political power. Angelo had come up with the idea all on his own. Bringing Corcoran into the new church would be a major coup for the church militant and for him. But it was proving very hard work. Corcoran didn't always seem to hear what Angelo said to him, and even when he did, his responses suggested he didn't care. Physically, his presence was disturbing, and even actually distressing. Corcoran was still wearing his old spacer's uniform, ragged and filthy, because he'd hospitalized the last three orderlies who tried to persuade him to change them for regulation hospital issue. He hadn't washed or shaved or even combed his hair since he arrived, and he smelled really bad. He looked like a wild man, openly contemptuous of all the usual civilized proprieties. He talked in long, jagged speeches that tended to wander around the point without ever actually touching on it. He was constantly distracted by everything around him, and sometimes by things that weren't, and Angela was finding it an uphill struggle just to keep Corcoran's attention. He tried to keep the strain out of his face and his voice, and persevered.
The church can offer you protection against the terror. You'll be safe with us. Let us get you out of here. They can't hold you against your will, not if you have the backing of the new church. And all you'll have to do is make the occasional appearance, the occasional speech or two on our behalf. No pressure, of course. Whatever you feel comfortable with. And we'll find you a really secure place, somewhere the terror could never find you or reach you. We want to be your friend, Donald. The church is your friend.
You want me to speak to people?
Corcoran held his hands up before his face, turning them back and forth, as though he'd never seen them before.
Praise the church and pass the panacea.
Bullshit! Bullshit! You can't hide behind your precious religion now, little angel. There'll be nowhere to hide when the terror comes. I know.
The rock cried out. No hiding place.
I don't want to speak to people. I just want to get the hell out of here. Get back to my ship. Back to the terror.
Angelo blinked at him confusedly.
You want to face the terror again?
Corcoran spun on him, his fingers crooked now into claws, his eyes suddenly inhumanly wide and unblinking, his lips pulled back into a vicious snarl. Angelo fell back a step, despite himself.
I want to fight the terror! Kill it! Hurt it like it hurts me! I can feel it. I can always feel it. Till death do us part, we're connected now. Screw your protection, Angelo! I want revenge! I want to be free of it! Do you think I don't know what's been done to me? Inside, I'm screaming all the time! Never be safe. Never be free, never be me again, until I've torn the terror apart, burned it down, and pissed on the ashes!
Ah! Well, that's all very interesting, but...
Corcoran hugged himself tightly, as though he might fly apart, still fixing Angelo with his disturbing, fever-bright eyes.
I see you, Bellini. There are dead men peering over your shoulder. There's something on your hands, and it isn't blood. Though it's red enough. You think you know revenge? You get me out of here, little angel, and I'll show you revenge.
Angelo had to swallow hard, unable to look away, from eyes that seemed to look right through him. This was just like the ecstatic, who'd also seemed to know things he couldn't possibly have known. What had the terror done to this man? What had it turned him into?
God feels your pain, my son.
God? Where was your God when so many innocents died? I think maybe what I saw was God. God, you're crazy! Devouring his own creation! Satan eating his children! Get me out of it, Angelo! Or maybe I'll eat you. Yeah!
Corcoran was very close to Angelo now. And still the angel couldn't look away from the dark, dark eyes. And then King Douglas and Crow Jane came striding through the illusionary gardens, breaking the spell, and Angelo was actually pleased to see them. He broke away from Corcoran and stumbled over to bow formally to Douglas.
Ah, Your Majesty, what an unexpected surprise and a pleasure. May I introduce you to my quite extraordinary new friend, Donald Corcoran? He and I have been having the most fascinating little chat.
How the hell did you get in here, Bellini? And where do you get off claiming to have official permission? I wouldn't give you permission to clean this place's toilets with your own toothbrush. And trying to take advantage of the mentally ill has to be a new low, even for you. Get out of here, now, before I have the guards throw you out.
Angelo drew himself up to his full height and glared at the king coldly.
I represent the church, and the church goes where it wishes. Your power derives from a handful of frightened men and women in an outmoded institution, Douglas. Mine comes from the greatest and most powerful religious movement this empire has ever known. The day will come, and sooner than you think, when your house will have to kneel to my church, and you will have to kneel to me. Make the most of your little authority, Campbell, while you still have it.
Angelo lurched backwards and sat down suddenly. Blood welled down his bearded chin. Douglas took a step forward, and Angelo scooted frantically backwards across the grass.
Never outstay your welcome, Angelo. And by the way, for a warrior of the church militant, you take a punch like a pussy. Now get out of my sight, or I'll have them set the dogs on you.
Angelo rose unsteadily to his feet, gathered what was left of his dignity about him, and opened his mouth for one last cutting comment, only to lose it all and run for his life. Crow Jane watched him go, and then looked thoughtfully at Douglas.
Was that really necessary?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You have no idea.